And as we just heard, Muslim clerics are condemning the burning death of a Jordanian pilot by ISIS militants. And a former ISIS hostage told CNN's Christiane Amanpour that his captors never talked about faith. They were thugs. Well, Theo Padnos had a different experience. He was held in Syria by a different group, the Al-Qaeda affiliate Al-Nusra Front, and says he and his captors talked about the Muslim faith all the time. And Theo knows what he's talking about. In 2004, the Massachusetts native and writer decided to immerse himself in the study of Arabic and Islam, falling in love with aspects of both, ultimately writing the 2011 book Undercover Muslim about his effort to try and understand militants in Yemen. He later traveled to Syria and was captured and held for 2 years by Al-Nusra Front, released last August after intervention by Qatar. You might remember we talked to his mother about his ordeal. Well, now Theo joins us from the BBC studios in Paris. And Theo, start with the draw of Islam for you. In 2004, you wrote for a newspaper in Yemen, but weren't allowed in mosques right next door.
It was a little bit like living next to this churning, powerful, beautiful, dangerous river, and you could not go swimming. You couldn't get close, you know. And I was just curious.
As you watch the recent news, I can't imagine what's happening to your stomach.
You know, it's... I have a hard time expressing my feelings about it, to be honest. I mean, I sympathize with the victims, what can I tell you? And I'm afraid for the rest of us. It happened, the same thing with the Charlie Hebdo thing here in Paris. It's just terrifying what Islam is encouraging people to do.
Should we say radical Islam? Or
you can say radical Islam if you want, but I can tell you that as a prisoner in a Jabhat al-Nusra jail, they certainly textual license in the Quran to kill the unbelievers, and that is what they are doing. So, you know, I think you could say that they are quite conscientious in carrying out the instructions of the Quran to the letter.
Well, I mean, to differentiate, there's certainly a sea away from the millions of Muslims, for instance, in America, who wouldn't even think of
That's
such
quite
a thing.
Right. Yeah. That's quite right. But yeah. There is an iteration of Islam that is causing us tremendous suffering and unhappiness. And it is quite a powerful and seductive version of Islam, and it's so easily communicated through the internet. I guess our question really about this kind of Islam is, how do young men find themselves seduced into it, and how does it communicate itself? You know, you can create one of these Islamic emirates in your bedroom.
And that's what you've been trying to explore, well, even long before you were taken hostage. What is the draw? And
that's right. What is the beauty of it? Because nobody could be attracted to a murderous ideology simply because it's murder. One doesn't grow up wishing to be a killer. Reciting the Quran itself is a beautiful exercise, perhaps especially when your friends and neighbors are being killed. The Quran has so much meaning to convey to people who are under that kind of stress.
Well, you describe, while you're being held captive for 2 years, the life of just piling into convoys and driving from place to place and switching from prison to prison as they stay ahead of the people who are out to get them. You describe Nusra Front commanders introducing 8-year-old sons to you, saying he's going to be a suicide martyr someday. The children, you write, participated in the torture sessions. They wore large pouches with red wires sticking out of them, you know, suicide belts. It's like being on the other side of a crazy mirror in the circus or something.
Yeah, that's just what it is. You're through the looking glass when you go into that world. And I didn't think I was going to come back. You know, I really was persuaded that with the things I was seeing, I would never be able to tell to anybody. But they let me go. And so I am in a position now to share with the world what I learned. Some of it is known, but a lot of it isn't. You know, a lot of the society that they're building, I lived in it for 2 years, you know, every day, and I still am in contact with the people.
Contact with which people?
Well, with some of the people in Jabhat al-Nusra.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, maybe I shouldn't go into this, but I'm interested in understanding how their lives are developing and, you know, what... These guys, you know, they took care of me, among other things. They saved me from being killed. We could have been killed by Daesh, ISIS. We could have been killed by the Syrian Air Force.
Well, let's really underscore that, because these people tortured you. I mean, kicked you, beat you, stomped on you, humiliated you, But all along, there would be occasional smiles. For instance, you sang Desperado. They apparently love an Arab version of Desperado. So you saw humanity in them. And always, they were never as bad as ISIS.
You know, when the Jabhat al-Nusra guys took me outside of the jail, sometimes they did in Deir ez-Zor, they would say, "Ah, the ISIS guys who are in jail with you, they're so bad, they're so horrible, you know, they're extremists." And then they would put me back in the jail, and they would close the door and go away, and I would be alone with the ISIS guys. And the ISIS guys would say, "Oh, the Jabhat al-Nusra guys are so bad, they're extremists. You know, what are you going to do?" They don't like each other, but I don't think that one group is necessarily more murderous or horrible than the other. They both enjoy killing.
Well, but at one point, you describe, and this is just a horror, James Foley, as we all know, was beheaded on a video. When you're being held by al-Nusra Front, they had that video on their cell phones, and they're waving around at you saying, "See what ISIS does to people?" It seems as if there is a difference.
Listen, if you were to hang out with these people in a room and you didn't know that one person was ISIS and one person was Jabhat al-Nusra, there is no way you would be able to tell based on the way they express themselves.
And again, I guess I just can't imagine the stomach-curdling for you seeing what happened to the Japanese journalists. This has got to be, it could have, there but for the grace.
Of course. I mean, I am grateful to the people who got me out of jail, especially the nation of Qatar.
What was the name of the American businessman who happened to be sitting next to your cousin in a dinner and ended up...
David Bradley, who's the owner of the Atlantic. And this person traveled back and forth to Qatar I don't know how many times. He basically put down all the things that he had to do in his life. I presume they're important in order to rescue me. I'm sure I'll never be able to thank this person. You know, I just can't.
What do you think should happen? Americans are loath to get involved in another war. You blame yourself for being kidnapped there in the first place.
Well, it's certainly my fault, yes.
Yeah, for going there. But what do you think needs to happen?
I think what needs to happen is that we need to partner with the Assad regime. I think that we need to encourage them to conduct themselves in a more civilized way. Listen, they have been dealing with this problem for decades. They have all the connections. To dismantle the Assad regime would put the entire religious group of the president in mortal jeopardy, risking a genocide.
So you're saying abandon the Syrians who've wanted to overthrow him because of his autocratic ways, and they'd have to be abandoned for now?
I realize that the Assad army, they call it the Assad army in Syria, you know, these people have committed war crimes, and yet they're our best hope, I believe, for putting this tessellated country back together again.
If you're just joining us, that's Theo Pagnos, who was held hostage by the al-Qaeda group al-Nusra Front in Syria for 2 years. He was released last August, and he's talking to us from Paris as three ISIS hostages, the two Japanese and a Jordanian, met a very different fate than Theo's, all killed. And Theo, you were held by a different group, but almost died yourself. When you talk about being in touch with some of your former captors, which is kind of amazing, do you think there's a little of the Stockholm syndrome there, you know, that they were your kidnappers, but they were also your only companions for 2 years? Is there, you know,
what else could I do with them? I mean, I'm not in a position to do anything harmful to them. I'm still interested in understanding them, and I want these people to stop killing each other. I cannot persuade them to stop doing this, but I don't know. Who invented Stockholm syndrome? If I have it, fine. I don't care. I'm. What's it going to do to me? Is it going to keep me up at night? I sleep all right.
I couldn't help but notice in your writing, when you wrote an essay in the New York Times magazine about your ordeal and told us about how at the end, when you were finally released, you went into an area where a lovely Indian doctor in a UN compound, in a very gentle way, gave you a medical exam. And it broke your heart. It reminded me of in the film Captain Phillips, which tells the real-life ordeal of the ship captain who was held hostage by terrorists. And then in the very end, he has a very gentle medical exam. And that's when he falls apart. Can you just explain what it was in that moment that made you fall apart?
It was not only in that moment. I mean, for weeks afterwards, anyone did anything nice to me, I cried. I mean, the stewardesses on the airplane, one woman just put her hand on my knee, and I could not stop from crying, you know. It was this gentleness, and it was so much of it, especially when I came home. Just everybody was gracious and gentle and kind to me, and it really did break my heart. There's so much cruelty out there in the world. We see it with the hostages, and then we see such goodness, too, and it just breaks my heart to see how willing people are to be kind to one another and kind to me. It's just, it's like, wow, the Muslims who did this to me, you know, they didn't have to.
Theo Padnos, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.